Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Heather Dawn Thompson, member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, has been named the new director of the Office of Tribal Relations for the Biden administration. She reports directly to the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. We caught up with her earlier this week on her second day of the job.
Thank you so much, and it's great to see you again.
Tell us a little bit about, one of the reasons this is a big announcement is because it is a change from previous administrations in the structure of this position and who it reports to. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
You bet. So as you know, the federal government has a nation-to-nation relationship and responsibility with tribal nations. They are not signatories to the Constitution, and so they are not participants in our democracy in the same way that states are. And therefore, the federal agencies need to have some sort of direct line, of communication with tribal nations. And unfortunately, this Office of Tribal Relations at the USDA had been moved under more of a public participation office and sort of demoted that government-to-government communication. And so under this secretary, thankfully, it's being moved back, and I report directly to the Secretary of the United States Department of Agriculture.
Tell us a little bit about what you know at this point, and it's early, about what Secretary Vilsack's priorities are and how they will relate to your office.
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the things that really drew me to serving under this secretary is, one, he has a proven history and track record in Indian country. He actually was the secretary that elevated this office in the first place and ensured that it had sufficient budget to serve Indian country. And then moving forward, the administration and Secretary Vilsack have made clear what their top four priorities are, which is economic recovery, addressing and ending the pandemic, climate change, and racial equity. And frankly, you're not going to find anywhere in the United States where those four issues converge more than in Indian country. So I'm just really delighted to be working with the secretary to address those directly in Indian country.
We have heard from this administration, virtually every spokesperson in every meeting is mentioning that word equity and giving specifics about what that means in the context of whatever topic they're talking about. In the context of the USDA and your role, talk about equity and what that really means, because that seems like an incredible challenge starting from where we're at to where we really want to go.
I can talk about really concrete components of that and things and conversations that we've already had. I mean, this is my second day on the job. But as you know, tribal nations are just different. They're structured differently. Their economic development is different. And if your agency doesn't take that into account, you're not going to have access. And so you would be treated differently than a non-tribal entity that is applying for resources with the USDA, and not fairly. So I'll give you an example. As you know, tribal governments don't have a tax base. And so in order to create their revenue, they have to participate in the private marketplace. They own casinos, as many people know. They own gas stations. They own golf courses. They own hotels. And that's how they finance and run their government. So those tribal corporations are wholly owned by the government. They're a hybrid, right? They are governmental entities. They're revenue generators. They're essentially the Department of the Treasury for that tribal nation, but they are also participating in the private marketplace. USDA has historically had very strong delineations between a governmental project and program and a private practice, private industry project and program. And here you have a hybrid that fits neither. And so for many projects and programs and loans and grants, tribal governments have just simply been ineligible because the definitions did not include them. So I think that's a very concrete example of systemic impediments that end up creating racial inequalities, not purposefully, right? But you need to be really thoughtful. You need to have somebody who's an expert in federal Indian law to help the secretary work through those impediments and straighten them out.
Yeah, that is something that you bring to the table. And I think a lot of people in South Dakota understand, you're Harvard educated, Carnegie Mellon, I think University of Florida, is that correct? Bush Foundation fellow, all these things. To tell us, though, for people who don't know you a little bit, what you're bringing to the table at USDA from the nation to nation conversation, from the tribal law experience. How do you kind of give that elevator speech to those who don't know Heather Dawn Thompson yet?
No, absolutely. So I'm a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, which in itself is not, you know, a qualification, but it does mean that I know my own nation, I know my own community, and I've spent my time learning that and coming up through those methods. But in addition, you know, I've been a practicing lawyer. I'm gonna tip my hat on my age for 20 years in Indian country. So I have represented tribal governments on and off in different capacities for 20 years. And one of the most important aspects of my work with tribal nations, because I have lived in DC historically in the past, and I do know it pretty well, the system, nobody knows it that well. But so I provide that opportunity of communications to facilitate that diplomatic relationship between tribes and federal government. So I have served as a tribal advocate, tribal governmental advocate, and specifically tribal economic development lawyer and advocate for 20 years. And I think that it reflects very well on Secretary Vilsack that he's been willing to bring somebody of that caliber up to work with him on these issues.
One of the things you've joined us on this program to talk about before is your work with The Inconvenient Truth, the history behind the Rapid City Indian Boarding School and lands. And from my perspective, that has seemed like a process of intense and comprehensive research on your part, then the education and the community outreach, the bringing people together to have really complicated and sometimes uncomfortable conversations, followed by action and policy change, which is a direction that we don't normally get to that point in many of these issues. Sometimes there'll be an effective dialogue, but we won't see anything real and meaningful change. How does the work that we recognize you for with that project apply to the work that you might do with the USDA? Are there parallels to some of that process work?
I think so. Obviously, I think being a good attorney and a good policy advocate, you have to know what you're talking about. And you have to be very careful to do your research and get the experience before you speak on it. And so I'm going to take what we did in the Rapid City Indian Boarding School project and bring that with me to USDA. But I think more importantly for us here in South Dakota is the bipartisan nature of those conversations. And I think you're going to see that reflected in this USDA and specifically in the Office of Tribal Relations. Agricultural issues, rural economic development issues, tribal issues, frankly, they're just not partisan issues. They're American issues. And we always like to say in Indian country, we're eyes for Indigenous. And I think that's one of the most important things I can bring to the table. Because in Indian country, as we know, we have natives and non-natives. My father's non-native, my mother's non-native. We all live together. We live together on the reservation, we live together off the reservation. And our rural economies need to rise as a whole. And I think one thing that we have not experienced yet in South Dakota that I'm hopeful for is in other states where rural tribal economies have succeeded, the entire rural region around it has succeeded. In some cases, they are the most and the biggest employer in the entire region. Tribal governments have some competitive advantages that our state and local governments don't, that we as a team, as a whole state, as a whole community need to take advantage of so that our entire region rises up.
You also mentioned the COVID-19 pandemic, and we know how much we're just beginning to understand how much has already been lost, especially with elders in Indian country and language and traditions and culture. It is an urgent need for vaccinations and mitigation strategies still. Tell us a little bit about how to meet that urgency. What are some of the challenges that you see ahead? And how do you see this administration really rising to that occasion? When what we're hearing is that the administration, as they come in, have found the vaccine distribution process, for example, to be in far worse shape than they imagined. Tell us a little bit about the challenge ahead of you regarding the pandemic in rural areas, particularly, and if this administration is ready to meet that challenge.
Absolutely. you know, as I shared, I'm on day two, but already I've had two COVID meetings. There are daily COVID meetings at USDA, which might surprise someone, right? You think, how does this relate to USDA? But you just put the nail on the head. You know, in rural America, we are not being addressed as quickly as we need. And in Indian country, it's not just urgent, it's an emergency. I mean, we're losing an entire generation. And as you pointed out, these are our Googles. They are our encyclopedias. And this information doesn't exist anywhere else other than in their heart and in their minds. And it's irreplaceable. I think what is really interesting about the USDA and what I'm hoping that they can bring to the table is USDA has hundreds of rural offices. We have hundreds of veterinarians that have offices and refrigeration and the ability to administer doses that has not been taken advantage of. And that is the one thing that has really impressed me about this secretary and this office is that immediately they are putting forward all of their resources that they have in rural America that make it more available to rural Americans.
Yeah. Are there other thoughts that you want to make sure that people understand about how this position is changing and how people can make those connections with their rural USDA offices? What kinds of things do those offices serve? For people who don't know, how do they reach out and make those connections?
Absolutely. I think that you'll find that the Office of Tribal Relations website on the USDA is a really good place to start. One of the things that on the outside that I have noticed in working for tribal nations is that there is not a full appreciation of the breadth of what USDA does. If you just take South Dakota, for example, their definition of rural at USDA is under 50,000 in a town. So that's pretty much everywhere in our town, you know, in our state, mm-hmm. other than Rapid City and Sioux Falls. So all of our communities and all of our tribal communities, for the most part, are eligible for USDA programs. And I think there's a large misperception that it is just for our farmers. And while, of course, our farmers are so important to South Dakota and to our economy, USDA finances electricity, energy, telecom, broadband, water, water infrastructure, and they have an entire program just for rural business people. Small business people in rural areas, 99% of South Dakota, are eligible for these low or no interest loans to be able to get their business back up and running. So that's what I'm really hoping to share, and I'm looking forward to advocating, is that there's just so much more available for South Dakota and the rest of Indian country and rural America than I think we realize at the USDA.
Yeah. Before I let you go, one more question, because you also mentioned climate change, and that ties in many people's minds to Keystone XL, which has now been paused. That construction in South Dakota has been paused, and people are wondering what's next with that. Can you tell us anything about what happens next with Keystone XL?
I do not know specifically about Keystone XL because that's not within the purview of the USDA. But climate change as a whole, of course, is a top priority for our office and the USDA. And I think, you know, South Dakotans, for example, we work with the land differently than people in other states. We hunt, we fish, we farm, we ranch. We, better than anybody, understand the importance of maintaining our water sources, maintaining good climate, making sure that the storms are not destroying our crops. And so I think there's a really good synergy in moving forward in a modern way together to make sure that we can preserve our rural way of life in South Dakota.
You're an outdoor adventurer yourself, right?
I am.
Well, we appreciate you spending time with us today. Come back anytime for the listeners of South Dakota. We'll be right here for you. Heather, it's nice to see you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for your time. Take care.
And you can see that full conversation on the In the Moment YouTube page or go to sdpb.org.